Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday morning, the 29th of January. Immigration reform. The bipartisan group of senators unveiled its immigration reform package yesterday. The president will be speaking today on immigration reform and seems to be in sync. We don't know yet, but reports are that he's pretty much in sync with his bipartisan plan that was unveiled. Senator John McCain is a member of that group, and on Sunday he said there's a new appreciation on both sides of the aisle, including maybe more importantly on the Republican side, that we have to enact a comprehensive immigration reform bill. We'll talk about what's in that particular bill and what the president is likely to say and why nobody's taken on this issue for a long time. Our guest is Professor Kevin Johnson. He's professor of public interest law and professor of Chicano studies at the University of California, Davis. He is on the law faculty, and he's written extensively on immigration law and civil rights. His latest book is Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. Welcoming phone calls from you, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to leave messages there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Kevin Johnson, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
So we haven't really looked at comprehensive reform in years and years and years. Are we doing it now and have a chance of it now because the Republicans need the Hispanic vote?
I don't know if I'd put it that bluntly, but I do think that the elections in November make it pretty clear to most observers that Latinos want immigration reform. They turned out in droves for President Obama. 70% of the Latinos voted for him. And the time is now for immigration reform. And if the Republican Party wants to remain competitive, particularly in states like Nevada, California, New Mexico, and even Arizona, they're going to have to think seriously about meaningful immigration reform and some kind of changes to our current immigration laws.
How long has it been since we've looked seriously at immigration?
Well, the Congress almost annually has passed some kind of immigration legislation. Mostly it's been tinkering. The last major piece of immigration reform, major sort of across-the-board revision of our immigration system really was in 1986. With the Immigration Reform and Control Act, which included a path to legalization, what was called at the time an amnesty, included increased enforcement, and also included some guest worker programs. And so that affected legal immigration, illegal immigration, and enforcement, the same kinds of things that they're talking about currently now, in at least in the senator's proposal.
And as far as you can tell, although we don't know what the president's going to say today, but indications are that what he believes should happen may be included in this bipartisan deal that we just heard about yesterday. Do you think that's true?
I think that since his first inaugural speech in his first campaign for the presidency, he has voiced support for comprehensive immigration reform and some kind of overhauling of the U.S. immigration laws. And I think that we'll hear from later today in Las Vegas saying how we do need immigration reform, and that he'll probably applaud the efforts of the bipartisan group of senators to set out some basic principles for immigration reform. And then he will encourage Congress, first the Senate and also the House, to give a serious consideration to the details. And as everybody will tell you, especially when it comes to immigration reform, the devil's in those details. There's going to be a fair amount of discussion, and the president's going to, I think he's going to, at this point, probably weigh in support of reform and offer to help try to broker a deal of some sort.
Mm-hmm. From what I've read, all that we will discuss here in a moment is contingent upon our success in securing our borders and also looking at visa overstays. There's evidently, according to the bipartisan recommendation, going to be a commission of governors, attorneys general, community leaders who live along the southwest border to monitor the progress of securing our border. And if that's in place, we can move ahead on a path to citizenship.
You know, that's one of the details that could be devilish. is that there would be a path to legalization, but the question is when that's going to be triggered. What's going to trigger it? Is it going to be a commission that comes to the conclusion that the borders are secure? Is it going to be when there's a certain level of arrests or what? And I do think that the longer you put off a path to legalization, the longer you delay that, the more unlikely it is that you're going to get support from many Democrats, including possibly even the president, on immigration reform. So I think that's one of the details that's going to have to be negotiated, discussed, and open to discussion and debate. I do think the commission proposal is a very shrewd one, in the sense that when it comes at least to U.S.-Mexico migration, the states that are primarily affected are Southwest, and this commission certainly would allow those states to have their message be heard, because governors, attorney generals from those states, and other political leaders would serve on this commission, and I do think that kind of voice for the nation to hear is important. We have heard repeatedly from Governor Brewer in Arizona that she feels that the nation doesn't understand fully what's going on in Arizona. I might disagree with her sort of analysis of what's going on, but I do think it's important to have some kind of official institutionalized conduit for information to Congress about these important border issues.
The president has already spent, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, a huge amount of money on border security, hasn't he?
I think one of the interesting things, one of the reasons that some immigrant rights activists have criticized the Obama administration, is that this administration has focused primarily to this point on immigration enforcement. And now, there is an exception to that, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that the administration put into place last summer. But year after year, the Obama administration has deported more immigrants than any administration in United States history, about 400,000 a year for the first 4 years of the administration. There's been a new emphasis on immigration enforcement by the administration, a program called Secure Communities that has required state and local governments to cooperate with the Department of Homeland Security in its removal efforts. And there's been a fair amount of criticism of an undue, some would say, focus on enforcement. At the same time, the administration is of the view, and I think this is a fair characterization, that they have to show they're serious about enforcement to convince Congress to pass reform that includes some provisions that might benefit immigrants. So, mm-hmm. So to this point, I think we've seen a focus on enforcement, and I think an incredible amount of resources, more Border Patrol officers on the ground than ever in U.S. history, drones along the border that are expensive, weaponry along the border fences. The Border Patrol and the Immigration Customs and Enforcement budget has skyrocketed over time, in part because of the demand of the public along the border and elsewhere for more enforcement. So I think that part of the puzzle has been put into place, and more needs to be done. And I think that the senators have mentioned that they're wanting to increase enforcement. And but at the same time, now it's time for some of these other parts of reform to come about.
Probably most important for those people who are here illegally is, what is the requirement? What are the requirements for the path to citizenship? Who qualifies for that? And it goes beyond, of course, those who are coming here from Mexico.
Yes.
It's all people who would like to come to America.
No, I think that's right. And it does seem fairly clear from the proposal, but also generally from what you hear talked about in Congress. One is there's going to be, some kind of fine. It's unclear precisely how much that fine would be if you're undocumented and you want to engage in legalizing your status. Two, there's going to be some kind of security check, and if you're convicted of a serious crime, you're going to be removed. Three, if you're behind in your taxes, you're going to have to pay your taxes. And I think that those are sort of the basics, and we're going to have to see what additional requirements, if any, there are going to be for the path to legalization, including how long it's going to be, how long you're going to be a probationary a legal immigrant before you become a legal immigrant, things like that, and actually one sort of real important issue is when this program would start. Is it going to take years until the border is secured when this legalization program will start, or is it going to be somewhat short of that?
Mm-hmm. What is that? I didn't understand this recommendation from the committee concerning agricultural workers who would be treated differently.
Well, I think that's an interesting point you make because it's unclear precisely what the senators were saying. This is how I guess I'd interpret. They're saying that agricultural workers have made important contributions to the United States economy, and if you think about it, also we've heard in recent years, recent months really, that in states that passed some of these immigration enforcement bills, states like Alabama and Georgia and South Carolina, concerns with getting farm workers. Now it appears that that there may be a special path to legalization for agricultural workers. But it also could be that they're considering what was considered in 1986 some kind of special agricultural worker guest program. But I do think that they've highlighted in this proposal agricultural workers in part perhaps, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, in part perhaps to highlight the importance of these workers to growers, to our economy. And growers ordinarily are generally conservative, and this is sort of, by mentioning farm workers and mentioning the treatment of farm workers, I think growers and sort of, more conservative farm worker bureaus are saying there may be something in this reform for farmers.
Mm-hmm. The other big question, and we hear from people frequently about this. You, I'm sure, know this in some detail. Family unification, is that addressed in this? There are a lot of people who have families who are separated, which seems to many to be rather cruel.
Well, I think that's where there's another devil in those details. I think there's some vague discussion of improving our legal immigration system. And I think there's long lines for certain kind of immigrant visas. We're talking years to rejoin your mother and father or your brother and sister. And I think some of the past reforms have talked about getting rid of these backlogs and facilitating reunification. The other issue that isn't addressed here is, and this is one where it comes up, and it's come up a lot in recent years, where you have immigrant parents who are deported, and the choices for their citizen, oftentimes their citizen children, is either to be de facto deported with their parents or to be separated from their parents in this country. There's nothing in this proposal that seems to deal with that particular issue, even though it's a growing issue. And as you say, some would say that separating families is exactly what we shouldn't be doing in our immigration laws. So it's an issue to be addressed in the details of any proposed legislation, I think.
Right. And this awarding of a green card, was it McCain who talked about that? We should just stamp your visa with a green card if you have a PhD or a master's in science, technology, engineering, or math from an American university.
Well, I think that's another area where the senators are attempting to build a coalition. There's been a great deal of concern in recent years that our legal immigration system doesn't make it easy for skilled immigrants to come or stay in the United States. And there have been, Bill Gates has testified regularly before Congress on the difficulties in getting highly skilled engineers to come and work in industry. I think this is a clear indication in this proposal that they're trying to appeal to Americans who are worried about the economy and want to get the best and brightest from the world over to stay in the United States. And I think that perhaps Senator McCain was talking a little bit generously, because I do think there would be a security check for these PhDs. There'd be all the regular paperwork that you'd have to do. But the presumption, in, at least in the proposal, seems to be that you know, you're highly skilled. You got a PhD. We're gonna make sure there are legal avenues for you to remain in the United States. For some people now, there aren't those legal avenues. Some PhDs, and that's been a continuing issue.
We welcome phone calls for our guests. We're talking about the bill we know more about, or the idea we know about, from the bipartisan group of U.S. senators. They included, just for your information, Chuck Schumer from New York, Dick Durbin from Illinois, Bob Menendez of New Jersey, Michael Bennett of Colorado, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Marco Rubio of Florida, John McCain of Arizona, and Jeff Flake of Arizona, who were together on this deal. Indications are that the president likes this deal, and he will be announcing his own plan today. What do you think of this, what you've heard about the details as we know them from these senators? Does it strike you as needed reform? Do you see problems with this? Do you agree that it being contingent upon our success in securing our borders and addressing visa overstays could be slightly problematic? Because how in the world do you decide that our borders are secure? What do you look at? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Professor Kevin Johnson. He's a professor of public interest law and Chicano studies at UC Davis, author of a number of books and papers. Most recent book is Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. To your phone calls momentarily, 800-486-8655, email talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with Fred Kaplan. Fred writes the War Stories column for Slate, and he has written The Insurgents, David Petraeus, and the Plot to Change the American Way of War. David really knows how wars are conducted, and the book about Petraeus is absolutely fascinating. Like this little fact, which really isn't about war, but Fred says he had surprising sides when he was looking for a staff assistant. He asked one of the prospective candidates who his favorite poets were. The candidate said he didn't read poetry, and Petraeus said his answer was unacceptable and lectured him on the importance of poetry for its insights into the human condition. And we'll talk about that and many other things concerning conducting war and counterinsurgency with Fred after the 10 o'clock news. Two phone calls now. Immigration is what we're talking about. Sheila in Green Bay is our first caller. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, good show as always. There's been two issues that I've been wondering that I've heard over the past couple of years, how this affects immigrants wanting to come to the country. And I've often heard from other guests on your show that if Mexico treated their lower-income people more economically responsible, they wouldn't be needing to come to our country. And the other one was Eva Longoria, I heard on a show, say that Mexican women were having fewer children.
Professor Johnson.
I do think that there's a number of things that you raise. One is, you know, the birth rate from Mexico has been declining over time, and in fact, some Americans aren't really aware, but the Mexican economy and the Mexican society has been undergoing a fairly significant transformation over the last 20 or 30 years. And it may well be the case that because of decreased fertility rates and the like, that pressures for migration may decrease over time. And then we would be in some ways we could end up being in a bind for labor, particularly in areas like agriculture and the service industries. But I do think it's important to recall, and Kathleen mentioned this, that migration to the United States isn't only from Mexico. It's from a large part of the world. Mexican comprises a significant but not the entire part of migration. And when it comes to legal migration and legal immigration, that's one part of the senator's proposal that really needs to be fleshed out in some detail. There is the discussion about legal migration for PhDs and those with skills. But I do think that, and there's also a mention of some legal migration for low and medium skilled workers as well. So I think that, you know, that's going to be one of those areas that we're going to have to see much more detail, much more discussion. The one recognition I thought was very important in the proposal was the recognition that most undocumented immigrants in this country come here to work, and they come here for jobs, and they don't come here for any bad reasons. It's just that they're looking to work. And that's something that I haven't heard from any congressmen, particularly those opposed immigration reform in the past. But I do think legal immigration, if you really want to address issues of illegal immigration, you have to address issues of legal immigration as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sheila, very much for your call. Rick in Milwaukee, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen, and to your guest. I'd just like to start by saying that I developed my thinking processes by the study of economics. And so I'd like to just say that, in general terms, American elections do have very profound consequences. The president was reelected by a convincing majority. I think the Latinos that were eligible to vote voted 71% for the president. So I take that as a national plebiscite on fixing this immigration problem once and for all. I, for my part, are going to try to get ready to welcome these new immigrants as American citizens. However, the federal government is so off with these estimates. I mean, they're more than 50% off with the estimate of private firearms ownership in the country. So I think they're probably at least 50% off with the estimate of the number of illegals that will be becoming citizens. I think there are enough of them to completely swamp the job market in the area where young urban black males are looking for work.
What do you think about that, Professor Johnson?
I think that the best estimates we have, and they're not estimates from the federal government, of the number of undocumented immigrants in the United States today is about 11 million. And that's fairly consistent from a number of sources. The U.S. government's estimates are slightly lower, so I don't think I'd be relying on the government's estimates. At the same time, I do understand that there's always been a great concern. Economists will tell you again and again that in the aggregate, immigration, including undocumented migration, is good for the U.S. economy. And it benefits the U.S. economy, increases GNP, and it actually even increases the wage level. Where the problem is and this is... What is at the center of the question is that in, you know, the low-skilled jobs, there is competition. There's some evidence with that African-American workers and actually workers without high school degrees, and there may be some wage depression at that bottom end of the market. So I do think that there is some reason to be concerned about that. I'm not so concerned about a flood, but I am concerned about sort of some impacts on wages. And I do think that we should view migration and immigration as more general labor market issue, and think about what we can do to enforce minimum wage, enforce labor protections, and actually promote education and other things. Because the answer currently is try to keep undocumented immigrants out. And that has been a failure to this point. If we have 11 million people here, we haven't been particularly effective in many respects about keeping people out. So the question is, how do we deal with the undocumented population that exists? And part of it is that some of them are going to be legalized. And then the question is how to make sure that the impacts that they've already had on African Americans at the low end of the job spectrum can be ameliorated in some way. But I guess, although there's some concern, and I think we should be vigilant, that to me is not an argument for stopping immigration reform.
Email from Dave and Spooner. Have we considered that other countries have had to deal with immigration and the solutions that are working elsewhere in the world?
I don't think we have as serious as we should considered what some other nations have done. I know right now the European Union has had some problems economically. But for a time, the migration provisions of the EU treaties have allowed migration, free migration of labor between the European Union nations. It was very controversial at the time, but you know, Spaniards can go to Germany, who can go to England and work and for jobs. And so, the EU has endorsed labor migration within those nations. And the United States, even though it's entered into a North America Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada, and trades goods and services, has not gone that next step that the EU went in terms of allowing freer labor migration. I do think in the long run we'll look more carefully at that kind of option to try to regularize the flow of people and migrants as opposed to the current haphazard system we have along our border. But I agree, we need to look more carefully at some of these regional arrangements and how other nations who are prospering economically have dealt with migration pressures, and hopefully we can learn some from that.
Susan in Appleton, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for the show. I find this really interesting, and I'm listening very closely. I'm calling because what I do is I'm a high school counselor. I work with students and try to encourage them, you know, on their path to their future, and often work with undocumented students who are very prosperous through high school. They worked very hard. They did well, but they don't really have a good path to be able to go on to college because of their citizenship issues. And so I just see it as an economic issue for us to have these promising students to be able to have the ability to go on to college.
I think you raised some very important points. The undocumented children who live in the United States, under a Supreme Court decision called Plyler versus Doe, decided in 1982, are effectively entitled to attend public schools, at least K through 12. And we, the taxpayers, spend money on educating undocumented students. The problem for many of them, and you identified this, is that many are not eligible for financial aid or loan programs from the federal government, in many states, not from the states as well, and find it very difficult to attend college. And actually, in some states, undocumented students might not even be eligible for in-state fees, even though they may have spent their whole life in the state. And some would say that you know, that's not a good investment in our future, in our economy. And in California, you know, the state has been providing some state financial assistance and to undocumented immigrant students, and has allowed undocumented immigrant students to pay in-state fees if they graduate from a California high school and have met the other residency requirements of the state. But different states do different things, and we don't have a sort of a consistent national policy at this point on that. And it's a problem, and it's a problem that I think that the president realized and the administration realized in putting together this Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that came out in June and has allowed sort of at least a temporary term of legalized status in the United States for undocumented children who came, I mean, undocumented students, including college students, including, you know, what some people would call the dreamers, who came here as children and allowed them to attend college, and is now allowing them to obtain, in some states, a driver's license and the like.
But this is still very much, I'm trying to make sure I get this correctly, a state-by-state variation?
Yeah, when it comes to fees for colleges and whether you're treated as a resident, you know, California is relatively generous, but some other states aren't as generous. The state of Alabama, when they passed their immigration enforcement law, has barred undocumented immigrants from you know, the public universities in Alabama. The state of Georgia, the Board of Regents there, barred undocumented immigrant students from the flagship universities that have limits on their enrollment and deny applications. So you know, some states are more generous and other states aren't. And you're right, it varies by state. Mm.
And Professor Johnson, with the proposal from, I don't know what the president will say, but from the senators, bipartisan group, would those minor children who came to the United States in this proposal be able to pretty much immediately earn citizenship?
That detail isn't firmly worked out, but it does make it clear that the proposal says that we recognize that people, minor people came here undocumented as children, didn't knowingly choose to violate any U.S. immigration laws, and therefore should be treated slightly differently than an adult who came here as undocumented. But it doesn't say how they're going to be treated and what their path to legalization is going to be. But you get the sense from reading the proposal, the idea is that there's going to be a little bit more generous treatment of these children who, people who came here as children. And I read that as a signal that some version of what is known as the DREAM Act might well be included in the overall legislative package on immigration reform.
I see. Thank you, Susan, so much for your call. Diana in Eau Claire, hello.
Hi, good morning. One irony I see is this policy seems to move us closer to Canada's policy, yet the right, which endorses this policy, has a lot of criticisms for Canada on other levels. But the bigger part that is very troubling to me is that our country would be moving towards this elite view and displacing less value on people of all abilities. We might end up with this big rainbow of people in terms of their skin color, but not diversity of abilities, mental illness, cognitive disabilities, physical disabilities, the aged, the ill. I mean, is that what we want our country to do? Is that what we want to say we value in people, only the higher intellectuals?
Yeah, no,
that's
I understand what you're saying, and that particularly pertains to the provisions that, as Senator McCain would say, where somebody who gets a PhD is rubber stamped with a green card and allowed to stay in the country. I do think I share a concern that you have that we don't want our immigration laws just to allow the most highly skilled, the most the most elite of the elite. I mean, we do have this sort of national history of embracing the huddled masses, and I do think that one of the parts of the proposal does recognize the need for some unskilled worker in particular industries. Agricultural work is mentioned in particular, but there's also a statement that we need to think about low and medium skilled workers. I think that that would sort of defeat some of the elitist concerns that you have. At the same time, it causes worry to some people, including one of the other callers, that we may increase competition for the least likely to be able to stave off competition in our society, African Americans, those with high school diplomas. So I do think it's a careful balance. Currently, our immigration laws are very narrow. If you're a Nobel laureate or a professional hockey player, it's pretty easy to get a green card. If you're an engineer a teacher with a PhD, it's possible, but still harder. And it's very difficult for low and medium skilled workers to come legally to the United States unless they have a family member here.
So it's no longer give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free.
Yes, I mean there's some limits to that, and I think that now we have a system where there's no elites can come and no poor could come, and the senators are talking about liberalizing both of those.
Right, it's interesting, isn't it? Thanks, Diana, very much for the call. We, for the first time, have some lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking about immigration reform, looking at what we know most about, and that's that bipartisan framework that was announced yesterday. Today, the president will announce what he would like to see. What do you want? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Kevin Johnson is our guest. He's a professor of public interest law and Chicano studies at UC Davis, and he is the author, I'm just mentioning one book, he's written many, Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. Let's go to Mike in Oshkosh. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Kathleen. Good morning, Professor Johnson. I have a comment and a question. The comment is we have 60 million baby boomers retiring. That's 10,000 a day for 20 straight years. The demographics work out like this. We're about approaching the point where two workers support one retiree in the country. The average retiree gets $500,000 more in benefits than they pay in Social Security and Medicare. That's a fact. We don't want to change that. That's just how it is. We don't have the tax base to support it. One of the ways we can do that is to increase the number of workers paying into these benefit systems. Getting 11 million workers paying into the tax system is not a bad thing, and conservatives should consider that or appreciate that fact. The question is, this is a contentious time, right after the fiscal cliff and all the sequester and all the stuff. Washington is totally polarized at this point. Is it a good thing for the president to be speaking this morning on this? They're making some progress, finally, on this immigration issue. Is the president just going to screw this thing up by potentially polarizing us once again?
Well, it's a good comment and a good question. I think you're exactly right about the economics of the situation. And one of the attractions of immigrants is that we're increasingly going to need workers as the baby boomers retire, and we need contributors to our various systems, including the Social Security system, including the tax system. Now, in terms of, I'm sure that President Obama doesn't want to blow this thing up, and that he wants to be as constructive as possible. And in fact, my understanding is that he's not floating his own proposal on immigration reform and is allowing the senators to try to work out some general principles, in no small part because he doesn't want to make this overly contentious and unduly challenging. So I think, I guess I'm hopeful that by speaking on this, he will encourage as opposed to polarize matters. Your guess is as good as mine, I think, about whether, he's going to be able to do that. But I think that's the intent here.
Mm-hmm. So who would be the likely opposition to all of this?
Oh, there's people, like Lamar Smith, the Republican from Texas. There's a number of others who have actually already mentioned concerns. It's primarily Republicans, not exclusively Republicans, but primarily Republicans from, I would imagine, including states like Alabama, South Carolina, and Georgia, which passed some very tough state immigration enforcement measures, who are likely to oppose it. One of the sort of beneficial parts of the coalition is that the two Arizona senators are on this proposal, and Arizona is one of those states that feels, that there's a number of leaders who feel very strongly about immigration and had a very tough immigration enforcement law that was passed. But we have Jeff Flake and John McCain who are on board here, and I think that's a very good sign. There are other people who certainly are likely to speak out. There's the advisor to presidential candidate Romney, Chris Kobach, Secretary of State of Kansas, a big endorser of self-deportation, is likely to oppose this. People who oppose amnesty as a matter of principle may oppose this as well. So I do think that there's likely to be some opposition, and that opposition in the past has been sufficient to bring down the legislation. We'll see if it is in the current incarnation when it evolves. And in these political times.
More phone calls in a moment, and emails if you'd like to go that route, and Facebook messages if you'd like to go that direction. We're talking about immigration reform, the president addressing it today in a speech in Las Vegas, and this bipartisan immigration group of Democratic and Republican senators announcing their plan yesterday, five measures that we've already discussed that would make it easier to achieve citizenship in this country, that would look at all of those measures being contingent on securing our borders and recognizing the characteristics which will help build the American economy and strengthen American families. So more phone calls in a moment. Here's the number again, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two, the author of The Insurgents, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War, Fred Kaplan, will be our guest. Fred writes the War Stories column for Slate. He's a former Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the Boston Globe. And our guest this hour is Professor Kevin Johnson, professor of public interest law and Chicano studies at UC Davis, author of Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. Bev in Green Bay. Hello, Bev.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Kevin. I'm calling with a different bent on things. I've worked in the medical profession. I've also gone to third world nations on missions and things like that. I have observed, first of all, because of the culture of some of the immigrants, what we as a nation embrace in their culture, I believe sometimes puts us at a great disadvantage. I'd like to bring up the Somali issue, the recognition of more than one wife, the recognition of however many children. That is not a cultural value that we as a nation have, but we are expected to accept that. And then accept the burden of that. The other thing is, I find that sometimes my acceptance of other people's culture is, I judge, better than their acceptance of our culture. I think that's lacking when people come to this country. I have talked to a number of people who've come from different countries. I say, what kind of education do you have about how things go here? Well, other people from our country who've been here. I'm done. I'll listen for your answer.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Bev.
Well, I mean, I think that raised some important points, and I do think there is some concern that some people have that immigrants who come here either refuse to or don't assimilate to American values and culture and the like. At least with respect to the path to legalization program in this particular proposal, the senators have made it clear that it's important there's some evidence of assimilation to American society, that there has to be the requirement that the immigrant learn English and civics and demonstrate a history of working in the United States. And some, you know, relative basic familiarity with American culture and society. That's not to say that, that all immigrants who become legal, who come to this country, are going to be as American as a born and bred U.S. citizen. But I do think the concern that you have is a real one, and one that it's hard to address in immigration laws. But is one that we haven't done a particularly good job society thinking about. We thought a lot about how to keep people out and how to let people in, but we haven't as a society thought as carefully as we might about how to integrate people who do come into American society. We, for example, as a nation, have been woefully inadequate in terms of providing ESL programs for immigrant students, programs that you could charge people to take, they're among the most over-enrolled and difficult to get into classes in the country. So we make a demand that immigrants learn English, but then we don't make it very easy for them to even pay to learn English. Same for civics as well. So I do think we should, as a country, should give some thought to the kinds of questions you've raised. How do we integrate immigrants more into American society and make sure that they're, you know, as acculturated as possible under the circumstances and is consistent with their values and traditions into U.S. society.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bev, for your call. Doe in Williams Bay. Hi.
Hi. This all just makes me laugh. Thank you for doing this. I am 80 years old, a contributing American. And my father came here 100 years ago. In fact, he came to Alabama from Europe, which knocks me out, and became a doctor. He was 13 when he came to this country and became a doctor. And I am so upset by what's going on today because there's not an American here that didn't come as an immigrant, except for Indians, and we shut them out.
Well, that's true, Professor Johnson.
I know that's exactly true, and I understand your unhappiness. And actually, sometimes I get very deeply unhappy with just sort of the quality and nature of the discussion, just how hateful it can be sometimes, and less than generous to real people with real problems, even though they may be different culturally and otherwise than I am. So I understand your frustration. I do think that, and I try to think about this in the way I look at it, is that there are some legitimate issues for discussion, debate, and how, you know, we do have immigration laws now. We didn't, or we had very few immigration laws 100, 150 years ago. And I do think we need to do our very best to make sure that those laws work, and that they can be support, you know, they can be enforced, that they can be, that they are supported by the American people. And that we do our best to do our best for Americans and for immigrants. And I think that one of the things to me, if I could contribute just a tiny little bit, is to try to improve the quality of the debate over difficult issues. Because sometimes I've been shouted down at forums and told to go back where I came from, and I'm from the U.S. I think that, and I hope, and actually that's one of the things that I thought was promising in the press conference yesterday. We can have a rational discussion about hard issues in a hard time.
Yes. What do you say to people when they say go back to where you came from and you're from here?
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that people, don't quite realize. I mean, our history as a nation, how so many people came from so many different places.
Right.
And how, it's funny, Luis Gutierrez, the congressman from Chicago, he was, told, go back where he came from. He's from Chicago. I mean, there are assumptions made by people, and it's unfortunate, and unfortunately that people, base some of their arguments based on assumptions and stereotypes and the like. And sometimes, they sort of cloud the real facts.
Right.
And that's what we have to talk about, the real facts.
And they rarely would say that to somebody who came from England or from Germany or from
Canada.
It's if you come from South America or if you come from Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or not even.
Right, exactly. Joe, thanks for the call. Frank in Brownsville, hi.
Hi. Illegal aliens are criminals. They are not immigrants. These people come here through the back door. They snuck in through the window. These are criminals. The government should not be giving them anything. They're criminals. You keep calling them immigrants. They're not immigrants. They're criminals.
Well, can you put yourself, Frank, in somebody's shoes who's living, a pretty poor, poverty-stricken life, maybe in a country like Mexico some years ago? You've got a family to feed, you don't have a job, and you know that 200 miles away you'd be able to find work to feed your family.
And how did you get here? You snuck in through the bathroom window. So what does that make you?
Person who's looking for a job. Professor Johnson.
Well, that sort of misrepresents the facts. The fact of the matter is roughly 40% of the undocumented immigrant population came lawfully to the United States on either some kind of temporary visa, maybe a business visa or a tourist visa or something like that. And what they engage in is they overstayed their visa and they violated their visa. That's not a crime. It's a civil violation. They can be subject to deportation. But there's nothing in the immigration laws or any other laws that says they're criminals. And for somebody who enters without inspection, you can say they're criminals. That doesn't make them criminals under the law. A lawyer would understand that if you violate a criminal statute, then you can be liable criminally and be put in prison. But most undocumented immigrants, even those who entered without inspection, aren't criminals. Some may be if they illegally reentered the country after being deported, but most aren't. So just to say they're criminals and they shouldn't be called immigrants misses the point, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll look forward to the president. When is he speaking today? Do you know?
I think it's at 11:55 Pacific time.
Okay, so it's
2:55 Eastern.
coming up. Thank you so much. You're such a wonderful guest, just really knowledgeable, and thank you.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Professor Kevin Johnson, professor of public interest law and Chicano studies at UC Davis, author of Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. We'll, of course, be doing more shows on this issue. It's definitely the issue of at least Monday and Tuesday of this week and certainly beyond. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program and for doing on-air production work as well here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thanks for all of your good calls this hour. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll be returning with a look at David Petraeus.